last year may not be applicable this year. And so we always have to be paying attention. We always have to be evolving. So sort of keeping your ear to the ground and trusting that not only your executive coach, but even my team teaches me every day, right? So just really being flexible with how we grow. And that is the mindset. How we change and grow is sort of what's guided me.
You're listening to the Building Better Futures podcast, where innovation meets inspiration. In each episode, host Eric Hirani journeys alongside notable thought leaders who are shaping the future, cultivating exceptional work cultures, and nurturing the next generation of trailblazers. We aim to spark inspiration by engaging in dialogue with leaders from groundbreaking companies, innovative projects, and exceptional teams. Our goal is to empower individuals to positively impact those around them and leave a lasting legacy of positive change in our communities and society at large. Let's dive in together and explore what it takes to build better futures, one conversation at a time.
Today, I'm so excited to be joined by Vlada Kniff, president of the New York City Public Housing Preservation Trust. Hey, Vlada, how are you?
Good morning. Pleasure to be here.
I always like to kick off the show with the good news and gratitude, so we'll just jump right into that. Is there any good news, gratitude you want to share with me in the audience?
Yeah. Love that you're starting the podcast that way. I actually had I had to get up at 5 a.m. on the Sunday to send this message because we had an incredible week at the Trust. And I had to say to the team, look, typically our work is very public. We prepare quite a bit for the board approval process. We run most of our contracts through public board approval process, but there's a lot that happens behind the scenes. It doesn't all come together in one week, but this is a summer week when things are slow everywhere else, but the team had just an incredible, incredible week. And I sat down and I listed out all of our wins and really just wanted to make sure that the team feels appreciated and they're seen and acknowledged. Again, most folks are away on vacation, but we're grinding this and we have to be. This is a new organization. We're building something and lots of things sort of clicked into place last week.
Thank you for sharing that good news and congrats to you and the team for that. My gratitude right now, I'm going to say, is always to the guests. So thank you for being on. I know you're incredibly busy and it's always like an honor for me to have so many incredible people on the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, of course. My gratitude will be to my wife. She's 7 months pregnant and I don't know how she does it and how moms do it and God bless them, but really just amazing. And so my gratitude is there. I'm very thankful for her and everything she does.
Congratulations. And
thank you.
It's a super special time. I've done it 2 times in my life. Yeah. So I have been through it and it's a really super special time. So I hope you really enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm scared. So this will be our second. So we have a 2.5-year-old daughter. What, do you have a son or daughter?
I have 2 sons. One is 16 and one is 5. But we took a long break.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It's fun to parent 2 very different age groups.
My sister and I have a 10.5-year gap, so I'm similar to what you have. But my brother and I are 2.5, like much closer. All right, great. Well, very nice to hear about your family. I hope to learn more about that. Well, so let's jump into a little bit about you. Tell us your background, right? Where'd you grow up? How'd you get into this crazy business? Where'd you go to school? Tell me about yourself.
Well, I grew up in Tashkent, Uzbekistan, probably an unexpected answer, but maybe not so much for New York City. It's a really great city of immigrants, and I'm proud to represent that group. My family brought me to the United States when I was 13, settled in a Brooklyn, in a neighborhood middle of Brooklyn, Midwood, and became really interested in climate change and sustainability very shortly after we immigrated. Well, by the time I got to college, I majored in environmental studies to please my dad, also information technologies, to make sure that I had a gainful work in the future. But it all worked out. I spent over 20 years really committed to work related to sustainability, resiliency, spent 11 years at the New York City Water Utility, at the New York City DEP, delivering the champagne of clean water to New Yorkers and making sure when it left our homes, it was still acceptable to the environment. And that is work that is hard to walk away from. And then the only thing that made me walk away from it is an opportunity to do sustainability work, but do it with NYCHA, do it with the city within a city, essentially, right? And make sure that we house some of the most vulnerable New Yorkers and provide affordable housing to those New Yorkers. So I've had a, I consider myself, that probably goes back to the gratitude. I consider myself very lucky and very grateful to be able to work on in these two agencies and be a public servant.
I think one of the most magical things of infrastructure of all is New York City's clean drinking water. And it is amazing. And it's so cool. And it's taken for granted by a lot of us, you know, me included. But I do love it. So it's very cool. And that's not to say NYCHA doesn't do incredible things for many, many people, right? I think the, I forget the exact stat, but, you know, the resident population of NYCHA would be like a major city in and of itself.
It would be Miami.
Yeah.
It would be, it's one in 17 New Yorkers.
So a lot of incredible initiatives you've obviously been part of, and that's wonderful. I want to ask you a quick question. You said you went into environmental science to please your dad. What was he an environmental scientist, or why would that, what was his?
No, the environmental studies was actually something that didn't please him. It's information technologies was a, he's a techie guy.
Oh, cool.
So that was the thing that pleased him. When I told him I'm switching to environmental studies, he was like, you're majoring in Greenpeace. Why are you doing this? But I ended up having a very rewarding and very technical, I would say, career, both in Department of Environmental Protection and at NYCHA. So I think that both things sort of came into focus throughout the career. And I rounded out my education in urban planning for my graduate degree. I guess this continues to answer your question. And finally, I got a PhD. I completed a PhD in 2023 in information studies. So it's been sort of an interplay of focusing on the environment, but then focusing on the urban environment, and then kind of bringing in technology into all of that kind of mirrors my work.
It's very cool. I mean, technology and AI, and I know we could have an entire episode on that, but just the way it's finding its way into everything we do, right? It's really, it's incredible. And I think it's great that you have a background, you know, an IT background for at least even just having those conversations, right? And being willing to bring them to the forefront. So, all right, great to hear about your background a little bit there. And I'm always amazed, and this is, I guess, another incredible fact about you, that to leave a country that you've known for 13 years, right? Like by the time you're a teenager, you kind of feel established in some sense, right? It's like culture and what you do after a year. And it's got to be a great shock. And my dad's an immigrant. Many people in the city obviously are immigrants. And I'm just always so amazed that, like, if you took me out of a country that I speak the language and dropped me in a country where, like, I don't speak the language or understand the culture or have the nuances, I don't know that I'm successful. I don't even know if I survive. But like, clearly you've been very successful, and a lot of people have. And it's a testament to the, like, I guess, hard work, goodwill, and just humanity. So it's very cool. Thanks for sharing that. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the trust and what it is, because it is new, right? And so I know there's probably a lot of people that don't fully understand, how does the trust operate? How is it different than NYCHA? I was doing some reading before, obviously, we got on here. And I know there's a component of it that the trust allows for additional federal funding than I guess NYCHA would be able to procure on their own. So just like tell us a little bit about, I know it's a long answer, but if you could share a little bit of what do you think is the most important things to know about the difference and what the trust is?
I am extremely proud to lead the Public Housing Preservation Trust. And it's created due to advocacy from the residents, from stakeholders, community-based organizations, in recognition of the fact that NYCHA currently needs about $80 billion to fully rehab its portfolio. And it's really years and years of federal programs being diminished and inability to secure funding from the federal government. And now, fast forward, the residents are paying for the crumbling infrastructure, the building systems that are failing and are resulting in quality of life issues that really no one should witness, right? The failing elevators, the failing heating systems, some of the things that you read about during emergencies in the news are really chronic things that have developed over the years due to lack of investment. And so the Public Housing Preservation Trust was created to address that and address that comprehensively. And so under the state legislation that Governor Hochul signed created the separate organization. It's a public benefit corporation, just like NYCHA, with a separate board. And we have some superpowers that NYCHA didn't have or some other agencies in New York City do not have. And one of them you mentioned, it's the ability to raise funding, and it's by doing the conversion from Section 9, which is the public housing governance that gives NYCHA funding, to project-based Section 8. And that allows us to raise senior debt, build a capital stack, and really pursue scopes that are comprehensive and allow us to do these rehabs that are absolutely necessary at this point. And so that is one of the reasons the trust exists. The trust is able to do 25,000 units under the legislation. And the other piece that allows us to make sure that we spend this funding effectively and efficiently is the alternative delivery methods that are available to us under the legislation. There are many agencies that would love to have our alternative delivery methods that are available to us, particularly in the capital space. I've heard DDC say, we fought and fought for progressive design build, but we got a version of it, but it's not the actual progressive design build that you guys have under the legislation. So these methods, and particularly design build, allows us to work with the construction, architecture, and engineering community and deliver these projects in an integrative manner with the stakeholders, our residents at the table, making sure that the scopes are comprehensive, making sure that the materials and the quality of work is great. And typically, design build projects are on budget and on schedule, and that's what we want here.
That's really cool. And the other thing I love about the trust, and I didn't mention this going in, was how involved the residents get to be in the process, right? That, I mean, if I live here, I would like a say in what we're going to do. And I think that's really wonderful that you guys are able to offer that, and probably unique in some ways, right? To have a voice in what capital programs are going to be undertaken in your development. You said something else about delivery methods, and it's funny, this has probably come up like every episode, the last few episodes. So I think this is something very interesting. We've had Evie McNeely on, if you know her from DDC. And you're right, they're fighting for a lot more, and they've gotten some legislation passed, but they need more. And but the flip side of the conversation has come down to like having all of the tools available so you can pick the right one at the right time. Do you feel that, like, do you have that? Is that something that you're excited?
We do.
Yeah.
We do. We're able to use sort of a more traditional delivery method, design bid build. There's also a construction manager at risk. We have basically all delivery methods available to us under the legislation. So the idea is, you know, at the moment, we're trying a couple of delivery methods. We're using a value-based design build framework that is sort of a little bit more established here in New York City. And there's more information, there's more case studies. And at the same time, developing a progressive design build delivery framework. But, you know, we're a new kid on the block, right? So we're just trying to figure all this out for the initial set of projects. Fast forward 5 years, 10 years from now, we'll be established, we'll have a balance sheet, we'll be able to pick. Some developments may not need these tools and we'll have sort of standard designs. So the ability to have choices is always a great thing.
Yeah, well, it sounds like there's also a huge real estate component to this. You know, I heard you talk about senior debt and raising money and a capital stack, and not typical terminology on our public side of the business. You know, on the private side, we talk about it all the time. Well, that's cool. Has that been like new exposure to you? Did you have exposure to that previously, or what's that been?
It is new exposure. I had sort of observed it as I worked at NYCHA, and I did spend close to 7 years at NYCHA working with our real estate department. So had visibility, understood how these deals were structured, but never had to structure a deal myself. So that is new when you hold that responsibility and you're in a driver's seat. Even if you're seasoned and even if you know how to do these deals, you need a really great team behind you. And so that is something that I focused on, hiring the right professionals.
Yeah, that is cool. I mean, I love real estate. I really do. And I wish I had more time to spend on it and to learn. But because of that, I've had some exposure to like investing in it, and then also like not so much raising capital, but raising debt and things like that. So it's fun. Well, so tell us, like, now, you know, we kind of heard your journey, right? All the way from, let's say, from when you were a kid to where you are today. What surprised you the most on that journey? What's been like something you totally didn't expect? And I'm sure there's a lot of that, right? How much of what we get in life do we actually expect? But what was most surprising to you in that journey?
Well, as we talked about in the beginning of the conversation, delivering the champagne of clean water, it's really hard to walk away from, right? So evident by the many years I spent at the utility, over a decade. And I think the people that are still at the utility, it's hard, they don't walk away. Once you kind of have the water bug bite you, you stay. But as an urban planner, I think that something was missing for me. And it is the interaction with people. The processes are very similar. When you're delivering capital projects, you go through your environmental review process. You are in front of the public quite often, but the reactions are very, very different, right? So I think the biggest surprise to me, and continues to be, probably not so much anymore, but as I've transitioned into public housing, and you said this before, how passionate residents are, how passionate the residents are about their homes, and as they should be. I think that also the discovery of the leadership in the NYCHA communities, they're really incredible advocates, people who are very educated, really understand the buildings, really understand their communities. And so really getting to know the residents and finding out who the leaders are and really working with them has been, as an urban planner, I crave that, but I think it exceeded my expectations as I transitioned into this work.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, it's probably hard to leave, and you were probably very successful at DEP as well, right? I mean, you know, so it's...
I loved it. I loved the work.
Sounds like you're having a good run here too, and enjoying the work you're doing here as well. And talking to the residents is probably a little bit different, right? Than like we were saying earlier, it's different. So in your career, right, like we mentioned, you've been successful, right? Everywhere probably you worked. Do you have like core values that guide that? Like, what do you think makes you such a strong leader and probably successful in certain ways? And I guess one of them is waking up at 5 a.m., but I don't have that one. But do you have others?
I think they keep changing and evolving. You know, I think that you asked this question before. Have you read the book? I've read too many self-help books and self-development. As I was younger, I think that now I attribute a lot of my success to having an executive coach. I started working with somebody about 3 years ago, and he's just incredible. And one of the things that we do together every year in the beginning of the year is that we pick a word, right, that we want to focus on that would ground me for the rest of the year, that would allow me to just like, when things are rocky, find that center. And so for the last 2 years, I've been doing that. And so my first word was courage. And the dividends that, you know, word and picking it paid over the first year of creating a brand new organization, and how I led meetings and how I negotiated some of the things that needed to be negotiated in making some of the foundational decisions. That word was just so, so important. Last year, I picked patience. And so that's been also really incredibly helpful, because, you know, we put a lot of things sort of in the ground and made a lot of foundational decisions last year. But now, like, we have to make sure and be patient that these things materialize. And so I think I'm going to continue doing this. We'll see if things change in the future. But that's been, those couple of words embody sort of not only the core values, but the ability to lead in a way that centers me and allows me to make decisions tied to what I kind of set out for myself in the beginning of the year.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp, your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.
I'm going to try very hard not to talk a lot about this stuff, because I love everything you talked about. So I also have a business coach. He's an executive coach for me, and he's been instrumental in a lot of the changes, you know, I've been able to make personally. It sounds like the same thing for you. And it's just interesting because so much of our lives are consumed by our lives, right? So who's looking out on top of that when we're like so focused on this in terms of picking words? So I haven't done a good job of doing this formally, but I will informally do it. So 2 years ago, we had picked proactive as our word. And this is more of a company thing than me personally, but I like your idea of doing it personally. But it felt like we were being reactive to a lot of things, right? And that was never the goal. It was just that we needed to figure out a way to start to be proactive, right? And my coach liked to say, hey, we're playing a lot of defense here. We got to start playing some offense too, you know, and try to shift everyone into that mindset. Last year, our word was innovation. And I'm still like so key on like, we got to change how we do things, how things are done in the industry. And don't ever doubt you have a good idea just because it hasn't been done before, right? Sometimes people get very stuck in doing things the way they've been done. I guess the trust is like a great example of that, right? You guys created something new through advocacy and understanding what the nuances were and challenges were of the existing structure, which was NYCHA. And now there's a great complement there. So I think that's really cool. I read a lot, and I'm just going to give you a heads up. That's one of your lightning round questions. We'll get to that later. And then I do also for all my direct reports, I get them an executive coach. So they all do some one-on-one coaching. I'm such a big believer in coaching. And my takeaway from your answer there is the leadership skill is to be coachable, right? To know you can be better. And I do find there are sometimes leaders who get stuck in thinking they are the best at what they do and no one could do it better or there's no other way to do it. And I always like, you're great at what you do. This is not an indictment on that. This is the fact that imagine if you were even better, right? Like if you continue to grow in that way. I love that as a leadership.
I also think that great, you know, last year may not be applicable this year. And so we always have to be paying attention. We always have to be evolving. So sort of keeping your ear to the ground and trusting that not only your executive coach, but even my team teaches me every day, right? So just really being flexible with how we grow. And that is the mindset. How we change and grow is sort of what's guided me.
I'm like so excited. I'm just like, I love these conversations. It gets me so amped up. It really does. To the point you just made, I'm actually reading right now, I'm reading Who Not How. I don't know if you've read it, but it's a great book if you haven't.
Yeah, I'm going to write it down.
But Who Not How. And in that, they talk about exactly what you just said, which is like very often your team is your who, right? They're executing, doing the things that you need them to do to be successful. But it's important to remember that they also need who's and you may be their who and to come to their aid and support when they need something, right? When they're challenged by something. So you're right. Like I learn a lot from my team and I hope they learn a lot from me. And there's a symbiotic relationship there that's powerful. Just so excited. But I'm gonna digress because I do want to get through a couple of other talking points here. One of the things I love about our industry and what we do is that we do impact, and DEP is a great example, and I actually use that one. We impact people's lives, right? I use the MTA a lot too, right? Transportation gives you the chance to get to work, gets you a chance to go out with your friends, right? You get from point A to point B. You know, the SCA and all they do for education, right? The higher education schools that we have in the region. So as an industry, what we're doing is improving our communities and building better futures, right? It's the name of the podcast. So I'm curious, can you like, do you have a story of like a resident or something that maybe someone, a community member said about a project you worked on and you were just like, that's why we do this. Like, I just like that. Those little stories are normally the best. So I don't know if you have one you'd share.
I mean, hundreds of them. But the one that I'll share that really comes to mind, I had to share this a couple of weeks ago when somebody came over from London and they were really interested in this particular project. It's called the Clean Heat for All. Have you heard about the Clean Heat for All challenge at NYCHA?
I don't know if I've heard of it. No. Share it with us.
Yeah. So the Clean Heat for All challenge came as a result of, I was the VP of sustainability at the time, and as there's a local 97 mandate to reduce carbon emissions in all buildings over certain square footage in New York City, NYCHA fell into the category, although there was a carve-out, specific carve-out for NYCHA, but still an expectation to reduce as a portfolio. And so I came in during the pandemic leading a team that was responsible for creating these reductions, and very clear very quickly and clearly, to me at least, became evident that all the technologies that were available on the market would just not allow us to be able to do that. They were too expensive. They were not designed for our operations team. And so we needed to do something different. And so during the pandemic, most of the communications were happening just like this on Zoom or in Teams. We started to figure out that we'll need a different product. And so we went out to market. We went out to and basically said, NYCHA is, again, a city within a city. We have buying power. And if we signal to the market that we're willing to buy 20,000-30,000 widgets, maybe there's a manufacturer that will create a product that we can actually afford. And so we did that. We referenced the refrigerator program of the 90s that created its first Energy Star refrigerator through an energy performance contract. We found all the people that participated in that program. We found the MOU. And we went out to market and didn't know what to expect, but had an incredible response. Fast forward to a couple of years ago, created a product, a heat pump, a window heat pump that fits into a window, is affordable. We're locked into a per unit price that is fantastic per that contract in a partnership with NYSERDA and NYPA. And we started to test the product. And going out to some of the homes and speaking to the residents about this, I mean, there's a lot of accolades around this project, but I think that the moment where I felt like it was all worth it was speaking to a resident who was like, I finally can sleep. My asthma symptoms are down. I can control my temperature. I have heating. I have cooling. This thing is quiet. It's beautiful. Like I right now speaking about it, I have like goosebumps, right? So that was the moment where I was like, okay, this is why we did this. This is exactly why we did this.
That is a great story. And I'm sorry, I didn't know that that was the initiative. I am familiar with that, that you guys did that, that you guys went out to market and you built like a custom unit and that it was being deployed across the system. I didn't know that that's what it was called because they're small PTAC units, right? They're window units that are...
Yeah.
I think it may have been you or someone, I think, actually did a CMAA presentation.
I did.
Oh, yeah. So, I was there for it. So I just didn't realize that's what the program was called. I'm sorry about that. But
no, no worries.
Things like that are amazing, right? Impacting someone's day-to-day living. They can sleep better. They can breathe better. It's just like, what's better than that? What makes you feel better than that, right? That was obviously a huge milestone for NYCHA. Do you have any like major milestones on the horizon for the trust you want to talk about? Like anything you're aiming for, a goal you're trying to reach that you're allowed to talk about and share?
Well, everything we do is public. So if you want to join any of our board meetings, they're listed on our website. But a couple of things I'll mention. We executed our first design build agreement for over $400 million for Nostrand Houses. Huge, huge milestone. We now have a design builder there. That means we can get to 100% design. We can work with residents more closely and closer to construction. So incredible milestone. We're about to do the same for Bronx River Edition. So that will be our second property with a design builder. I'm really, really excited. And then we have two other properties that are in the pipeline where we're moving through design build steps and they'll be following the steps of Nostrand and Bronx River Edition.
Very nice. Well, congrats. And I saw the announcement maybe a couple of weeks ago, right, on the design build being awarded. So I know that was a huge
step.
Yeah. Very cool. Very good. I'm going to just totally flip the context right now, but I think you're going to have great advice here. So I mentioned earlier, building better futures, right, about building better communities physically, right, what we do as infrastructure. I think another huge component of it that really inspired me to do this was I was fortunate to have a lot of great like mentors and people along the way that taught me. And so in that way, building better futures is also about building the next generation of leaders. And with that in mind, I wanted to ask you for like students, young professionals, early career people, do you have any advice that you'd share with them coming into the field? And then not that you have to go this way, but, you know, as an industry, we are still predominantly male. So I don't know if you have anything as a perspective from a woman or something like that. But yeah, sure. Share some advice for the next generation to be the next Blatter, right? We need more people like you.
You're very kind. Whatever little bit of time that I have available to me while I'm not building this organization or taking care of my family, I do try to dedicate it to investing in female leadership. I think that I've been extremely fortunate and having some incredible leaders along the way, including Nitro CEO, Lisa Bovahayev. Yesterday, I said to her, can I grab you for 15 minutes? And her door is open and she's just amazing. Same goes for Deborah Goddard, was my boss in Capital at NYCHA. I still talk to her on the weekends. I need to talk to you, need to run some ideas by you. Just really, I'm super fortunate. And so I co-teach a Columbia course with Curtis Strickland, who was the former commissioner of DEP. And one of the proudest moments was finding out that three of my female students who I went to lunch with and tried to help in the work and finding work, they ended up in really great jobs. But to come back to your direct question around advice, and I was thinking, for some reason, I was thinking about this morning and kind of in the beginning of the conversation, my focus has been on how do I become most efficient master builder, essentially, right? How do I do really big construction, really big work as cost effectively and efficiently as possible, with focus on sustainability, with focus on resiliency? I think that's sort of been the progression of my career. I am extremely curious to see, I know that there's like a lot of shift toward machine learning and AI. I would love to see, I don't know if I'll have time left in my career to kind of figure that piece out, maybe. But I'd love to see the younger generation not just focus on like a discrete area of how do we create more like pleasing things in the AI space, but really start to blend it into the built environment space. And so that's something that I feel like I'm running out of time. You probably need like 5-10 years to really get to something really meaningful. And I really would like to see the next generation do that. But in general, I think that for me, what's worked is creating a network, finding your people, right? That's number one. Staying curious, staying flexible. That's number two. And please, please, please don't discount public service, especially in the infrastructure space. We need smart, driven, dedicated people really stepping up. So those are things that I want to say for the young professionals.
Great advice. And I love that you summarized them into the three key bullets. You know, you kind of took a page out of your own book with the AI thing, right? Your background being both like environmental and science, but also the IT component and how you think it's helped you in your career. So that's proof, right? That works. It's important. Yeah. And the AI stuff is moving so fast. I spent 2 hours on Saturday, like trying to map out, and I've taken some courses and just mapping out again, because it changes every day, really. And you got to like keep up with it. And it's
100%.
But it's really exciting too. There's some very cool stuff that they're doing. All right. Last question before we jump into the lightning round. Is there like a quote or a mantra or something that you like subscribe to and live by?
Great question. You probably picked up on the fact that I allow myself to change and evolve. But lately it's been build with purpose. And that goes both for the built environment and building out a team and organization. Lead with integrity, right? I think that somehow I keep being asked to take on leadership roles, and it's really important to make sure the team respects you and you're public and transparent, and always leave something better behind, right? I think that kind of summarizes how I work.
I absolutely love that last one, right? You know, it's like the, you can't take it with you kind of, you know, like you might as well leave the world a better place than you found it. All right, cool. Let's jump into our lightning round. These will be some fast-paced, fun questions. Feel free to answer. And if you don't have an answer, just let me know and we'll move on. First one, what's the best trip you ever took? And I don't know if you like to travel or not, but if you do, what's the best trip you've ever taken?
I love to travel. I don't do enough of it. One of my favorite trips was my latest trip with my son to Japan. He did more 16th birthday. He said, just take me there. And he started saying that when he was 9. So it was long in the making, and I really got to bond with him, and it was an amazing trip.
So I'm going to, you know, I know you mentioned network earlier and you may already know this, but I'm going to bring that full circle with, and also to mention Lisa. So I sit on the board of Salvadori. I think last year we honored Lisa at her annual event, but Trenton, who's the president of Salvadori, recently took his kids to Japan, and he said it was absolutely fantastic. And it sounds like you had the same experience, and I would love one day to go there. Is it the future? Like everyone says, does it look like the future?
There's a lot of the future. And I think blending tradition, blending culture with the future, and that's so important. Like you can't have a robot city. And I think they've gotten that right.
That is so cool because I've heard amazing things and I would love to go one day. Very cool. Very nice. And so you said instead of a 16th birthday, that was the, and that's cool too, right? Experiences over things or typically you remember them. All right. Very cool. And then this one is, I'm going to ask you, so the question is actually last book you read, but then I'm going to ask you a follow-up after this one. So what was the last book you read?
The book is called Super Gut.
Okay.
I think that in addition to sort of professional development, a little bit obsessed with personal health, especially lately, because I feel like I've had to like optimize my schedule, make sure that I show up fresh, clear-minded. And so I've been doing a lot of research on how to make sure I eat right. How do I make sure that I maintain my health? So that was the last book.
Very cool. And so I take it that's that when it says gut, it's not like gut instinct. It's actually about like eating right and...
Exactly.
I think it's really important to take care of your health. And one of the book I read right before that I started, Who Not How, or maybe two books ago, was called The Five Types of Wealth by Sahil Bloom. And in that, they talk about how like your physical health is one of those types of wealth, right? Like you could be very rich, but it doesn't matter if you don't have the ability to live your life the way you want to live it. So I will check that out. I really like that. My follow-up question here is what's the best like leadership or you call them self-help or self-development type books you read? What do you think is your favorite?
Oh my gosh, so many. Do
you
mind if I look
at
my
list? You don't have to pick one.
I'm gonna look up my, I listen to my books.
Me too. I do the same exact thing. And here's a shout out to public libraries and-
Oh yeah, 100%.
An app out there called Libby. And if you are a member of your public library, you can get a lot of free audiobooks on Libby. So I'll just mention that here. But public libraries are amazing. And my daughter, we take her now just for fun. She can't read. But it's like just like the wholesome community experience. They have an indoor play area. They have kids books. Like they do so much, public libraries for the community. So just shout out there.
Yeah. The Seven Habits. I'm sure you read that one. Give and Take by Adam Grant. Let's see what else. I have... over 100 books on here at the moment.
I'll write down Give and Take. I've read some other Adam Grant stuff, but I haven't read that one.
That one I do like. A lot of health books on here. 11 Laws of Likeability. She was a coach for a little while, so I recommend that book. And I did like Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg. So those are the couple of books I'll mention.
Very cool. Awesome. Well, thank you for indulging me there with those questions. I will say thank you so much. And this was an incredible conversation. And if you don't mind, I would definitely love to take some of that offline, especially on the leadership and the coaching and how you build a team, because that is, you know, especially Who Not How. I know you, I would, again, recommend it because it's a lot about that building out your team, right, in the right way and making sure they feel empowered to succeed, because that's how you can continue to grow.
That's now next on my list.
Yeah, it's good. I like it. But with that, that's all the time we have for today. We'll include any links to resources we mentioned in the show notes. Thanks again for listening, everyone, and keep an eye out for our next episode.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, Eric.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp, your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.